Welcome to another edition of Market Impact Insights, your podcast source for business leadership perspectives to help your business grow. Hear from experts in marketing, sales, business strategy, and more with practical advice for business success. Make sure you won't miss the latest episodes by visiting marketimpactnow.com. Now, here's your host, Dan Albom.
Welcome back to another great episode of Market Impact Insights. When you think about the heartbeat of any successful organization, anything in terms of manufactured goods, I mean, that is supply chain and the competitive advantage and how much of a driver in terms of financials and a cost of doing business being very optimal in terms of your supply chain strategy. I mean, it is just at the crux of any successful business. We're going to get into exploring what's happening in that whole space that is approaching $30 billion in terms of supply chain management worldwide. So we're talking about huge financial stakes to do it well. We're going to dive in with Art Cook. And Art is a passionate supply chain strategist. He's all about transformation. He's the supply chain transformation advisor at Stone Tree Investment Partners. He's also the president of Art Cook Management Consulting. He's also the author of a book, The Supply Chain Revolution, Unlocking the Sustainable Profit Chain. So we want to get into what is this revolution all about? What does it mean? And how can we successfully leverage our supply chain for competitive advantage? Art, welcome to Market Impact Insights.
Thanks, Dan. Really looking forward to our discussion today. And hopefully everybody learns a lot and we have a lot of fun learning.
Absolutely. And Art, you know, looking at your successful journey, I want to go back and if you could share a little bit, what originally sparked your passion to really focus on and examine and really unlock some of these secrets around supply chain?
You know, it goes way back. I grew up in Flint, Michigan. I have a journeyman's card as a machinist. I watched the big changes that happened in Flint due to the automotive industry. And at that point in time, I told myself I did not want to become obsolete. I studied at the University of Michigan, have a degree in biochemistry. Then I went to get an MBA. At the time, it was called Materials and Logistics Management from Michigan State University. And I thought I'd apply what I learned in the trade as a machinist in the tool shop into industry, and it's all worked out really well. So it's been a lot of fun. Challenges at times, but overall, a lot of fun.
So we're in really interesting times. Obviously, you know, global markets, regardless of what industry you're in, a lot of disruption and change the last couple of years. We've got new technology coming in. But when we think about effective supply chain strategy, the development and the management of supply chains, what makes it so challenging today?
Well, we've done it to ourselves to make it so challenging. And we've, you know, organizations over the past 30 years have threw their fishing net out to speak halfway around the world to where our supply chains stretch a lot to China and remote locations. And as supply chains get further from the source of your manufacturing, your final assembly, or your customers, lead times increase, variabilities increase. And as that happens, it becomes more cumbersome to deal with.
Yeah, it's interesting. You think about customer experience, a lot more focus and conversation around that today. And but yet for most of us, when we're buying something, if it's a physical product, and it's everything we don't see, but yet depending on how well or maybe not how well you execute your supply chain, that ends up affecting customer satisfaction in a very personal way, doesn't it?
It does. And I think what happened with the, you know, COVID-19 and the COVID era challenges, it highlighted what can go wrong. And it was only a matter of time for it to happen. Something was going to cause it. So we as consumers, we really felt the impact of these extended supply chains due to what I call mass globalization. And it hit us everywhere from the products that we use at home to our food on the kitchen table.
Yeah. And so everyone's expectations, you know, it seems like going into this COVID era, they've been built up in terms of just expectations around speed and efficiency. And so I come to expect something, but then when there's a disruption, now I'm back to delays, something doesn't get shipped on time, or there are shortages. And we've kind of gone through this weird roller coaster, haven't we, when you think about meeting customer expectations.
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of think, you know, before the pandemic, we had a very well-oiled supply chain, and there wasn't a lot of demand variability, and there wasn't a lot of supply variability, because we had, it was, the global market was very stabilized. And when the pandemic happened, it threw that all up into upheaval. And now we're really understanding today how exposed we are, and organizations are working to unravel that as swiftly as possible, or where it makes sense. And now they're being challenged with the reasons why they should have never went there in the first place, with these extended lead times and having suppliers halfway around the world.
Yeah. And so one thing in this global supply chain that's a reality is there's this intersection cross-functional in any organization. So you've got operations, you've got supply chain management, but then it touches and intersects with these different functions. And that includes marketing as well. And you've talked about something, it's this concept of 1% equals 50%. When it comes to that intersection of supply chain and marketing, what's that all about?
Well, what I challenge all organizations to do is do a simple Pareto of by part number, and take it, you know, the sales price by the quantity sold, and come up with, you know, that number, total amount sold over a period, and maybe go a year or 18 months. And Pareto that out, where you sort it from the highest to the lowest. And what I do is I say my A's are the top 80%, my B's are the top, the next 15%, my C items are the next 4%, and my D items are the last 1%. And if an organization goes through and does that math in that sorting, and take a look at their last 1% of sales of item to customer, and the customer, how much a customer buys, both way, do it both ways, what you'll find is approximately the last 1% of your sales represent 50% of your part numbers and 50% of your customers. So what I challenge organizations to do is first do that and sit back and take a breath and go, what does that mean to their business? And often cases, you know, marketing and sales say, well, we need to have that last 1% to be competitive. And my challenge is, do you really need that? And how can you look at changing, are their part numbers already exist that the customer can take instead of that parts within that last 1%? And how much do you really get value from those parts and those customers, and what can be done differently? So we can have a whole dissertation on what to do in that area.
Well, it seems like what you're getting at is the opportunity for SKU streamlining based on understanding kind of what drives the bulk of your revenues. Is this really just around prioritization and focus?
It's your strategy, prioritization, and focus. So one of the things that can be done is you can go two paths. You can go the path of, and it depends on what your business model is, which path you go. You can go the path of that last 1% of part numbers to check and see if there's already product that you're making and the customer never accepted to take that. So you can say, you know, Art Cook Enterprises, you have to take these part numbers because we're already making them, and it's fit, form, and function's the same. We never forced you to take them. There's that. There's another part you can go do and have a one-time fire sale. and sell enough to these customers to, you know, last them many years if they don't spoil. The third thing you could do is just eliminate them altogether. And one time working with a general manager, we went in and looked at the last 1% and we ended up eliminating two-thirds of it. Getting the customers to take existing parts that were already there, had a one-time fire sale, and ended up only eliminating about 15 or 20% of those parts, just eliminated them altogether. And we saved the company close to $45 million on a new ERP system where they didn't have to get one as complex. We had a lot of open requisitions for employees, and we did not fill those. And we just re-looked at the business and said, this business does not need to support all that proliferation of part numbers. And it really changed the way they looked at their business. Another thing that can be done is, say, for instance, you want to keep, you know, you feel that's the market you want to play in. Okay. What I would recommend doing is carving that last 1% of sales away from your overall business. Look at the cost structure you need to support it. And what I like to say is it has different order winning, order losing, and order qualifying attributes than the top 99% of sales. You have to increase how much you're going to sell it for. You're going to have a different team and make a separate little business out of it to make sure that it is, you can measure it and you can determine, is it profitable to be in? And if you're working in the internet space, where you're selling across Amazon and businesses, you know, channels like that, I would recommend trying that, because there's money that can be made there, but it has a different cost structure and it has a different sales price structure, and you have to get it away from your main business because it needs to be managed completely differently. I know that was a bit, but there's a lot to that.
A lot packed in there, and it seems like everyone wins. There's the opportunity for simplification of if you streamline the offerings, and then you really are, at the end of the day, you're delivering what people have proven that they want the most. And so you're really aligning yourself to customer needs. And so the customer wins in that perspective. But then there's this business and revenue opportunity as well in terms of just how you're managing your portfolio. Yeah.
And Dan, what I see a lot of times people try doing, they try to do it underneath the same enterprise, and they don't understand all the costs associated with it. And by separating and having two different business models, so to speak, or two different general managers, they learn how to manage it effectively to where they can make money.
Well, Art, we're in a world where we are just swamped with available data, right? We've got a lot there packed in. When it comes to metrics measurement and really, I guess, focusing in a productive way around that in the supply chain, what are your thoughts on where metrics and measurement can really come into play in a positive way?
Well, you have to have the right dashboard, okay? And there's so much information out there. You can get into an analysis paralysis where you get too much information. So there's, you know, I have five critical measurements I look at that supply chain professionals should be focused on, CEOs should be focused on. And what I feel is inventory and data accuracy. You have to make sure that those are just absolutely spot on to be successful. And then I look at organizations and I say, how many times are you doing spot buys to suppliers? And if you're doing a lot of spot buys to suppliers, it means you're not building relationships with those suppliers, and you need to do that. Then I talk about another measurement is you know, how many of your suppliers do you have in a partnership program? How many are you moving to where you have a long-term agreement with them and you feel that you're sharing information, you're sharing cost, and you're working to reduce the total cost of ownership? So that's a key measurement. Then another critical thing is supply chain a profession in the organization? Is it looked as a professionals? And that's a real easy one to measure. And it's simple as, does the head of supply chain report to the CEO? And that's a simple measurement, yes or no. It's a, you know, it's binary. And then the last one is reducing lead time. What's being done to reduce lead time? And you always want to be collapsing lead time. And if you're not measuring on collapsing lead time through postponement strategy, you're missing the boat. So those are the five big ones I focus on.
Yeah, I think underneath what you were saying there is that supply chain needs to be viewed very much as a strategic part of your success formula. And it's just not just an exercise in squeezing out and minimizing costs. That maybe, you know, cost management is one part of it, but it's much more than that, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, if you're in an organization and your method to reduce cost is to browbeat the supplier, you know, that will work one or two times. But, you know, we're at a point in time where good suppliers can pick and choose who their customers are. And if you're a horse's patoot to your supplier and you're beating on them and you're not working with them to reduce total cost of ownership within the pipeline, you know, you're not going to get preferential service and they're not going to respond to be flexible to you. They might keep you on as a customer. However, if all of a sudden parts become tight, you're not going to get preferential treatment. So you want to stay away from those relationships. And the worst thing that could happen is they end up firing you. And I've seen that happen where suppliers have fired their customer due to the customer was a bad customer. And they said, you know what? You're too costly to deal with. Bye-bye. And you don't want to be in that situation.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And technology is certainly changing our lives in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about AI. Everyone else is. So let's examine that. Art, where is AI? Where do you see that really transforming supply chain strategy and management?
You know, I think it can be endless. And, you know, just going kind of back in time a little bit, I feel there is two false dawns that I've seen in my career. One of them was with lightless manufacturing, and the other, that's MRP2 and lightless manufacturing. The other one was with blockchain, and they didn't really fit. But I'll tell you what, with AI, I think within supply chain, repetitive planning, forecasting, and keeping parameters up to date, it can be a game changer. The key thing is for organizations, they are going to have to prove out how it works on updating key bits of information such as lead time, order frequency, safety stocks or safety time inventories. Prove it to their buying team. And once they go narrow and deep and prove it in certain areas, then they do pilots and turn it on in certain, you know, with a group of maybe 25, 50, 100 parts and let it do its thing and see what happens. And once they get the buy-in from the team to go autonomous, I see just tremendous benefits for reducing the total cost of ownership through the whole process with better on-time delivery to internal and external customers through the pipeline.
Now, shifting over to your book, and I'm so intrigued with the title because you're talking about a revolution in supply chain. Can you get underneath that a little bit more? Are we really in a revolution?
The organizations, I feel it comes down to the organization. What happened during the pandemic, all of a sudden supply chain bubbled up and it was a hot topic to talk about. And that's what we needed to get people to understand, that supply chain's a profession. There's, you know, it's a very complex, convoluted process within all businesses. And it needs to be looked at by professionals, and it needs to have a seat at the with the CEO. If organizations do that and they look to develop their teams and they look to on how to constantly reduce the total cost of ownership through improving inventory velocity, then it's a revolution. If they step away from the pandemic and they go back to business as normal, I feel the competition's going to leave them behind. So absolutely, I feel we're at an inflection point. The organizations that adopt the practices within supply chain to increase inventory velocity, compress lead times, take out process variability throughout the element, invest in their people, look at supply chain as a profession, can and will beat the competition at the end of the day.
Do you see it really going back to the tone being set at the CEO level in terms of them very much demonstrating an understanding on the strategic impact of supply chain?
Well, two of the best performing companies out on the Dow and NASDAQ are run by supply chain people. And if people pay attention to it, they will see what can be done. An example is if you take a look at Costco. Costco turns their inventory over 12 times a year. They turn it on average, I think, 12.7 times a year. And with standard terms, they're paying their suppliers in net 30. And when you take a look at that, on average, their suppliers are financing their inventory. Their suppliers are financing the inventory within their stores. Apple does the same thing. Apple turns their inventory better than 12 times a year, and their suppliers are financing their pipeline inventory. That's what you want to get to.
So we talk a little bit about leadership and setting a tone. Art, what do you think separates truly exceptional leadership from just good enough?
Individuals, the leaders that stop, listen, take a breath, ask questions, and get to know their strengths, weaknesses of their team much deeper than just the veneer of, you know, their name, rank, serial number, but get to know what kind of parent they are, what they do outside of work, what kind of hobbies they have beyond their performance inside the facility. And the reason why I feel this is important, I use the term finding genius and the castaways. And too many times in my career, I work within supply chain, and I preach that supply chain needs to be a profession. What I find too often is it's not a profession. So I'm working with a lot of people that are not professionals, and they're great people, but you have to develop them. And what I've found is if you get to know people and you learn about them, you will learn that they have these great traits that aren't being tapped at work for whatever reason. And you have to tap into that and get them to punch above their weight and through the ceiling that somebody's placed on them. And if you do that, you get exceptional performance. So great leaders have to have the ability to do that. It's just not about going and hiring a bunch of A players, because if you go just hire a bunch of A players, what happens is bunch of A players are all trying to climb over one another to get the time and get a promotion, and they'll eat their young for lunch, so to speak. But if you get the full gamut of the team working together, A players, B players, and C players, where you take C players and turn them into A plus players or B minus players, leaders have to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's really like being a very engaged conductor of an orchestra, and to create that symphony, you know, it's understanding just as there's different musicians playing different instruments, that you have this diversity of team members, where they are in their career. It could be multi-generational, some early career, some late, but it's that meshing and really creating synergy and harmony. And that isn't so easy to do, is it?
No, Dan, I really think you make a good point. It's like being a conductor. I think that's spot on. And conductors know where people's strengths are. So you're exactly right. And the best ones know how to do it. And it's just taking a breath and listening and hearing and being that coach, being that internal mentor and working with people, because inherently people want to do a good job at work. They want to be recognized. They want to have fun. So you have to, the best leaders know how to tap into that. And I like your analogy of the conductor. I think you nailed it, Dan.
Yeah. And it's the simple things too, right? Because in order to really truly understand where each of your team members is, you got to stop talking and do more listening, and you got to ask questions.
Yep. Yep. You know, I try to, whenever I'm done with a discussion with somebody, you know, ask, is there anything that you need? Is there any help you need? And ask them. And the first handful of times you do that, you know, they don't hear you. They're not expecting to hear that. But after a while, they start recognizing that you're going to ask it. And they start coming up with really pointed things saying, you know, I think I have 85 or 90% of it covered, but if you can get me some help in this specific area, I think we can break through. And you work on getting them that help. And once you start doing that, the conversation changes within organizations. It's about how to get things done and how to break down barriers. Instead of, you know, a leader going, whose throat do I choke because something went wrong and who do I blame? It's more about how do you break down the barriers, people bringing problems to the table sooner, to where the organization as a team can work on them to break down what the real problems are.
Yeah, you're really tapping into something I'm passionate about, which is really servant leadership, because you're talking about it's putting the team in front of personal ego and really figuring out, how do we continuously improve? How can we elevate performance? And I love how you describe that.
Yeah, thank you. And that's a lot of what I have in the supply chain revolution. It's a mix of, you know, the processes that will help organizations get things done. And it's a mix of how to help people get these processes in place to where you can tap into their brains. I'm a firm believer a brain is a terrible thing to waste at work, and you don't want individuals to check it at the front door and just come in and do tasks all day long. You want to simplify things to where you can have these great people that you're hired to solve the complex problems and dig into things, instead of running around putting out fires and doing a bunch of remedial tasks that a system that we pay millions of dollars a year for can do.
Now, you're advising leaders around the world on really optimizing their supply chain. I want to flip it around, Art, and ask you, what's the best piece of business advice you have ever received?
Keep my mouth shut and listen. You know, it's what I will say is the best piece of business advice I've got from people is how to find somebody that you can have on your team that isn't afraid to speak the unfiltered truth and find somebody that's an accountability partner for you. You know, we all get into work and we get in, you know, we have the best intentions driving in at whatever time you get in. You know, you're driving in and you say, I'm going to get these three things done. And the day takes over. However, what I've always found good is finding somebody that will speak the unfiltered truth to you, tell you when you're full of BS, and somebody that holds you accountable. That's the best advice I've ever had. And I give that to everybody.
Yeah, that's powerful. That objective lens. That is so spot on, because we, as much as we want to be self-reflective, and it's important to do that and to kind of hold yourself in check, there just always seems to be a better, broader perspective when you open yourself up to someone who's not as close to that which you are passionate about, or maybe biased, could be even unintentionally biased, but then they come in with a fresh perspective and they're going to see things in a new and different way.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So, Art, when you think about the future, what makes you optimistic?
You know, where we're at with, we've had this very painful moment of COVID hit us. And it caused what I feel a point of enlightenment about supply chain. And I really feel, as I mentioned a minute ago, we're at an inflection point. And people can run with that and make a huge difference. And I'm excited about the organizations that are using what happened to them, you know, 2-3 years ago, and working on building to where that doesn't happen again. And I think there's a renewed understanding that we need to build our product closer to where the customers are. We need to source our product closer to where the customers are. It's okay to have operations in China. It's okay for us to have operations in India, Africa, wherever they may be, but build the product and source the product regionally for those markets. And what it does for you is, when it's done right, you have tremendous velocity of your inventory. You can have responsiveness, flexibility to your customers, and you will take a lot of cost out. And at the same time, if you're building the exact same product at different locations, it gives you insurance in case there's some sort of disaster happens at one of your factories, you can not shut down the world of your product. So what gives me a lot of hope and inspiration is we're relearning what we learned in the 80s and 90s, and hopefully that will give us a toehold to improve our processes going forward to where all businesses are ready and better to serve their customers.
I like that. We're kind of a back to the future scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you have any other final advice for leaders that are looking to optimize their supply chains and elevate performance?
You know, I'm going to go back to the five things I talked about. You know, really take a look at your inventory and data accuracy. How accurate is it? And if it's not accurate, you know, get the team, not just you, everybody in the organization to drive it to be accurate, because inventory accuracy, you can have bill of material accuracy that could cause problems. So it's engineering, it's sales and marketing, it's the shop floor, it's, you know, supply chain, it's the whole team. Then look at how you're working with suppliers. Eliminate the spot buy tax. And, you know, I've been in organizations where they've been buying the exact same part number from a supplier for 20 plus years, but they've never entered into a blanket agreement, a long-term agreement, a memorandum of understanding, nothing like that. They continue to buy it every time as a spot buy. Take a look at those. And if you're doing that, put a stop to it, because once you do that and you start working with the supplier, you can build a long-term relationship with them. And then you move up on the importance level because they realize you're going to be around for a while. And, you know, then the other thing is, you know, can you build one or two supplier partners? That's so important. And the last thing is a thing you can do immediately, you could do today after hearing this. If the head of supply chain isn't reporting to the CEO to where they have a seat at the leadership table, fix that today.
There's your action plan. Art, thanks for joining, sharing your perspective on how supply chain, we are in the midst of a revolution and an opportunity to drive more competitive advantage. Appreciate you joining.
Absolutely. Not a problem anytime, Dan. And give me a call or invite me back if other people have more questions. I'd love to talk about this.
Absolutely. And a reminder to everyone to please continue to help make this podcast even better. You can do that by going out and giving us a rating and a review. It is so easy to do on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcast and Spotify. And as always, make sure to visit marketimpactnow.com for the latest in business leadership perspectives. So long until next time.